She makes what? The villain. The fifth Cormoran Strike novel was just published, and the villain is a man who dresses up as a woman in order to gain access to certain places that only women are allowed, and therefore kill women.
This yeah. bitch is tripping. Like, are you kidding?
And I'm Kelly.
And this is What You Should Read,
the podcast where we should all over our books.
You paused a little bit there, Rach.
I did. I forgot my line.
It's only the thing we say every episode.
I know. I don't know. It's still yeah. hard for me.
It's been a long weekend, okay? I'm really just happy I remembered my name.
Mm-hmm. We've also just spent a glorious hour and change talking to Kendall, our friend, about J.K. Rowling and what it means to be a J.K. Rowling fan in this post-Twitter age. So stick around for that because it was a great discussion. I'm super excited for everyone to join in the discussion with us. So that's great. But in the meantime, Rachel, what are you reading right now?
I am about, how many pages? I'm about 70 pages into the Book of Two Ways. Listen.
What's gonna happen?
I have been in a huge reading slump for weeks. Okay, I finally yesterday finished The Year of the Witching, which was really good. I mean, like 3.5 stars. Pretty good. But it took me 19 days. It took me almost 3 weeks to read that book. And I think I'm finally out of a slump because I have been just, you know, I've been really enjoying this and I like want to read now. I just think things with work have been really overwhelming. So all I want to do is watch YouTube videos when I get home from work. So,
sure.
But I think the slump is on its way out and I'm back to reading. So
woohoo. Yay. Good. Kelly, what are you reading?
Pass. We talk about it.
Oh,
in the next segment. So I'm going to let that be a fun surprise for like 45 minutes from now.
There you go.
Okay. So Kelly passes. So I am reading The Seep by Hannah Porter, which I got from the library like a long time ago. I won't say how long ago, but I'm finally reading it. And I am 130 pages in. It's only 200 pages, so I'll probably finish it tonight. I like it. I don't know. I'm having a hard time deciding how much I like this book or if I even really like it or if it's just like so different from what I usually read that I'm intrigued, but it's definitely not dragging, you know, it's definitely keeping my attention. It's about like an alien invasion by these beings that's really just like known as the Seep. And the Seep is this drug almost that is like has this symbiotic relationship with humans, and the Seep can solve all your problems. It can change the way you look. It can make everyone act nice. Like it's kind of like a complete panacea for all of society's ills. So everyone's like, oh, the Seep is great, right? Like we've conquered death. We've conquered illness. We've conquered like people being mean to each other and political like disputes. You know, all of that's gone now. But the main character, Trina, is starting to feel like maybe like we're all kind of like not, you know, we're losing our humanity, basically. And then at one point at the beginning of the book, her wife decides to become a baby again because that's something you can do now with the Seep. So she can go back and become a baby and be reborn. And she's like, wouldn't it be great to live my life again without all these bad memories from when I was a kid. So, but you know, Trina is like, but you're going to leave me, you know, and that's weird, but, or that's, you know, awful. I feel sad. So it's Trina's like journey after that happens. And she's an interesting character. She's a trans woman. So there's, I think, really good trans representation in this book. And yeah, I think it's interesting. It's just, I don't read, I've never read anything like it, which I guess is, if you like science fiction, and I've read a lot of science fiction where it's like people can cheat death, you know, like Neil Schusterman does that in Scythe. I mean, a lot of writers do that. So if that's something that you are interested in, I would definitely check it out. So, yay.
Was that one of your five? Because I feel like you've discussed it before.
No, I did a recent acquisitions for
okay.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I am here to make your day very happy with some book news. And then Rachel. but so a bunch of romance authors, including Alyssa Cole, are going to do an auction to support Georgia's runoff election.
Oh.
I love it so much. It's going to launch soon. We'll have a link, and it will benefit Fair Fight and other groups to make sure this happens. And their tagline is something like giving 2020 a HEA. Like a happily ever after. And I'm like,
yeah.
It makes me so happy just to think about it. And I love that they're doing it. I don't know what all they're going to be auctioning off, but probably like books and early reader copies, maybe like editing. I don't know. I'm very excited. They're getting donations now, and then they're going to launch it, I think, possibly later this week.
Oh.
So I'll tweet about that too. And I'll have the link. But this is so exciting, and I love that they're doing it.
I can't wait.
That sounds great. Fun.
Okay.
Well, I have been following something that I found on book Twitter that I really want to share with the listeners, because I think we really need to support this author and other authors who are going through the same thing. So Joan He, who is author of Descendant of the Crane, which is a YA sort of Chinese-inspired fantasy novel, she tweeted out on November 9th that she is suing her publisher, Albert Whitman and Company, for copyright infringement. Or she is one step away from suing them. So what happened is, so they failed to pay their royalties on time. And she said at first, you know, with COVID and everything, she and her agent and legal counsel sort of, or like, gave them a little bit of a pass, but then they kept not paying. And per her contract, at the point so many days passed when the payments are due, all of the copyright and rights to the intellectual property go back to her, and the publisher has no more right to sell the books and make a profit off of it, right? So they passed that date, and they sent the publisher a letter saying, you know, per our contract, you have not paid royalties, so you need to pull all of the copies of the book off the shelf, and all rights go back to me, and I can sell it to a new publisher, right?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't do that. The publisher, A, went right ahead and put out the paperback, which was due to release. So they released the paperback. They didn't pull any of the merchandise off the shelves. And they paid her her royalties too late and said, oh, but we paid you your royalties. Well, that's not how contracts work. So, you know, they sent a cease and desist to the publisher, said you have 30 days to comply, and they did not. 30 days passed, and they still have all the books out on the shelves. So now, because of this breach of contract and copyright infringement, Joan is saying, you know, I really don't want to sue, but I think I have to now. So everybody came out in full support of the author and a lot of other authors with this company. So this is the publishing company that's best known for publishing the Boxcar Children series. They've been around 100 years, like literally since 1919. And a lot of authors are coming out now saying they're also having a lot of problems with this publisher. So the publisher put out this quote apology statement that was really totally just BS. They didn't even address the copyright infringement issue. They just said, oh, we're so sorry. We were late on our royalty payments. We're really working on trying to like improve our system so that doesn't keep happening. We're sorry to any of our authors that have had a bad time. We're sorry. We're thankful to Joan for speaking out, you know, and sticking up for herself and blah, blah. It was totally like, and literally every comment on this tweet was, you didn't address the copyright infringement. What are you doing about that? Have you taken the books off the shelves? Have you, you know, have you complied with your legal obligation and all this stuff? And it's been crickets. It's so awful. I feel so bad for this author because, I mean, luckily she's with a new publisher now. Her new book is coming out with Macmillan. So you can pre-order her book, The Ones We're Meant to Find, through Macmillan. And if you do want to buy her book, The Descendant of the Crane, you can buy it through, what's it called? Book Depository, and the money will go to her UK publisher, who she said is keeping all of their contractual obligations and everything. So if you do want to pick up that book, this is a book that I've never read, but it's been on my radar for a while. I think I heard about it on Get Booked. The Book Riot podcast, Get Booked. They had recommended it at one point, and I added it to my TBR, and I just haven't gotten around to picking it up. But yeah, so, you know.
It's a crazy story. I just wonder what's going on at that publisher, you know? Yeah, sometimes people F up and payments are late, but as soon as you realize it, you don't let it go on that long, and you fix the problem, and you definitely don't break your contract and publish a book after you have lost the rights to do so. You take the L and just like give the intellectual property back to the author. That I feel bad for people who work at that publisher who had nothing to do with that situation and are just like doing their jobs. And now like, you know, probably what agent is going to sell to that publisher now?
Right.
They won't. So their days are numbered anyway, it sounds like. So, but that's too bad.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're just going to do a very brief recent acquisition. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. Rachel, do you have a recent acquisition?
I do. All right, folks. I pre-ordered this before my book ban went into effect. So don't at me. But I have Barack Obama's new book, A Promised Land, in my hands.
Yay.
The order came in and I'm hugging it so much.
I can't wait to read it. I'm like tearing up just looking at it.
It's really heavy. The paper must be very like, yeah, the paper's definitely like high quality, like thick, heavy paper. So it's definitely gonna be hard to pick up.
I'm just so glad I get to read that now that Joe Biden has been elected. And, you know, oh, I can't wait. It's so beautiful. I'm so jealous you already have yours. I should get mine soon. Yeah. So.
And there are no blurbs on it at all anywhere.
Wow.
Because he doesn't need them.
No, he doesn't.
I actually would have laughed so hard if, like, the only blurb was Michelle Obama. Like, you should read this. It's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, what's anyone going to say? You know, like... Yeah,
Barack Obama, who's that? Oh, well, yeah. Michelle Obama blurbed it, so I guess I'll pick it up.
I have it for my Kindle, and I can't wait to read it. And I'm definitely glad I got it on my Kindle, because that's...
Oh, yeah.
That's going to hurt.
I might have to just buy the audiobook too.
I already pre-ordered both a hard copy and the audiobook so I can go back and forth.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, the discussion our listeners have been waiting for, I think, because we keep talking about it. And today we're finally doing a deep dive on Harry Potter, JKR, and her awful tweets, and we're just going to talk about it. We're going to deal with it, and we're going to be joined by the wonderful Kendall, who is a dear, dear friend of ours. So stick around, and we'll be right back. And we are back. are joined by a very dear friend, Kendall Johnson. Hi, Kendall. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Kendall, you are our longtime friend and honorary Hall family member. So, Kendall and Rachel, why don't you just sort of, Kendall, why don't you introduce yourself and how you know us, I guess?
So, I grew up going to Maine in the summer and spending time with my grandparents, and I met Rachel at a Girl Scouts day camp. Now, I was not a Girl Scout. I don't really know why I was there. But I met Rachel, and we became best friends, and we were probably 8 or 9.
Yeah, 8, I think.
A few decades now. And then once I was involved in your life, your parents really couldn't get rid of me. Around pretty much 24/7 for entire summers. So I feel like a member of the Hall family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart today.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so for those, well, you probably saw it in the description of the episode, but today we are talking about Harry Potter and the controversy surrounding J.K. Rowling and her views that she just can't stop expressing on Twitter. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that we have feelings about that. And also, Harry Potter is really important to us. So we felt like we really needed to dive into this topic and talk about it and really kind of go into it. So, Kendall, I would like you to talk a little bit about, because you, like you said, it's very near and dear to your heart. So what is your history with Harry Potter and what has it meant to you over the years?
So I would like to think of myself as an early adopter of the Harry Potter universe. That's why I like to pretend I'm an influencer now over, you know, my 100 Instagram followers. But I read the book when I was in first grade. I read the first book. I was obsessed. I was addicted. I'm also just one of those weird people that reads really fast. So when I read it, I instantly wanted to devour all content related to it. And at that time, there was nothing. So I remember my parents ordered the second book for me from the UK for my birthday, because at that time things were just coming out in the UK first. I think the third book is when they started coming out at the exact same time. I went to like the midnight releases of the books, of the movies. I got you guys into it. We would always talk about it. And I don't know, I started it really early, like I said, and I was addicted. I was so fascinated by the characters, by the world building. And I think because I was really young, you don't really see a lot of flaws in childhood books, movies, you know, all that. So at the time, I just was like, this is the best thing ever. I love this. And obviously now my opinion has changed on that.
Right. Right. And I absolutely, you are the one that introduced me and Rachel to Harry Potter, right? Because, and when you said I wanted to consume all of the content around it and there wasn't much at the time, I kept thinking about how you just created your own content, because we did this like theater camp in the summer and you would play the character of Hermione. Every single game we would do, it was like, it was improv basically. And you were just creating storylines for Hermione. And this was, yeah, you had only read the first and second book, I think.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, Rachel and I staying with you during college. We went and stayed at that big house you were living in. And I remember talking for hours about our Harry Potter theories. And
yeah,
I just have so many good memories, you know, with you guys and with my brother and my cousin talking about Harry Potter. And I mean, it's kind of sad, I guess, now that it's tinged with whatever JKR has thrown on it. But I do have really great childhood memories related to Harry Potter. And I think that's kind of a common experience for a lot of people our age.
Absolutely. Yeah, Rachel, can you speak to that as well? Like what Harry Potter has meant to you over the years?
Absolutely. Harry Potter, I mean, after Kendall introduced it to us and we just got right on board, we read the books over and over again. It was a constant, constant presence in my life through my adolescence, up through college. I mean, I read and reread the books over and over again. I consumed so much fan fiction. I just couldn't get enough. And the characters meant so much to me. The just feeling like I was in that world. Yes. And that was kind of the first time that had happened for me in a sort of a literary sense. So yeah, I mean, it was just always there. I mean, it was definitely a defining aspect of my childhood.
Yeah. And I'll say adulthood. You know, I don't think that it stopped when I, you know, because I actually found them later because I was older than you too. So I was probably in high school when I first read it, or high school or college. And then it has continued more and more. I've just found ways to be a fan, you know, into my adult life. Kelly, what about you? What is your history with Harry Potter?
I'm sort of the exact opposite of Kendall. I was a very late adopter. I read the first four books back to back, I think maybe a week or two before the fifth book came out. I don't remember what year that was, but I'm pretty sure I must have been in my early 20s. So very late. But I mean, like pretty much everybody, I absolutely loved it. I went to midnight book parties for books 5, 6, and 7. So book 7, I had just moved to Baltimore. Like, I don't even think I had been here a year yet. And I was working the night shift. So I would get off work at 11:30. And I went home and I walked my dog. And then, like, he and I drove to the Ivy, which is a bookstore like right up the street. And I went and I got my book and I came home and like read most of it, I think. And then I was working the next day too. And I took it to work and was almost done. Like, they reached the part where like the last battle is about to start. And then like the 6 o'clock newscast started. So I had to stop reading, which was the worst part for all of it to stop. but I mean, I feel like most actively literate people, I felt very seen by Hermione. You know, like, she, I think, is every actively literate girl. And unfortunately, just like Matilda, who I loved as a child, the creator of this character that I love is absolute trash.
Yeah, I mean, that's same for me. You know, it wasn't just a book that I liked, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, I love that book, it's a 5-star read, moving on. It spoke to me. I, like Rachel said, I was immersed in the world and I never wanted to leave. And I, even, like I said, even as an adult, you know, I took every opportunity I could to be a Harry Potter fan. You know, at the Baltimore Symphony, they would do, shows where they would play the soundtrack to Harry Potter while the movie was playing. So you could watch the movie and hear the live orchestra, which is great. And I remember, you know, I'm, you know, in my 30s and I'm in line for the bathroom at intermission. And there's this girl who's 10 and she's talking to her mom. She's like, I just love reading Harry Potter. I can't even read anything else. I don't want to read any other books because I love Harry Potter that much. It's like, yeah, I remember that feeling and I understand it because it's just such a great thing to be a fan of. And I think that's like important to keep in mind as we're talking about, you know, what's happening now, is that this is something that means a lot to a lot of people. And that's why it's so hard to see it tarnish by the author. Because I feel like fandom, when you're a fan of something, is something that it's bigger than just like liking something, you know. And I don't know if anyone wants to talk about that. I mean, Rachel, you mentioned fan fiction and reading fan fiction. I feel like that's a big part of the fandom too, and how it impacts your experience as a reader.
Right. It's like taking the world that someone else built and making it your own, and being able to figure out things about yourself through this art that was created by someone else, and sort of being able to look at the world through that lens and understand it better, or just in some way help you kind of get through it.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like there was a certain feeling I had, like I'm a serious Harry Potter fan, and it almost, you know, I remember going to see the movie for, I think it was the fourth movie with my roommate in college. And there was a scene, or no, it could have been the first movie, because there was the scene where Hermione says, "You're a great wizard, Harry." Oh. And they smile at each other. She's like, "Oh, they're in love." And I was like, "No, they're not. They're not." And I felt so, I had to really sit her down and explain to her who loved who.
Well, what's funny is that now, you know, J.K. Rowling is saying that they were in love. She wishes she wrote that they were in love.
Yeah.
She says that she regrets putting Ron and Hermione together because Harry and Hermione should have been together. And that's just another example of how badly she messed up this, in my opinion, perfect creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just not shutting the fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah. For real.
Does she have to retcon everything?
Everything. Everything.
I didn't know that. That's, you wrote what you wrote, like stand by what you wrote. But okay, I think we should just sort of, for those who don't exactly know what we're talking about, Kelly, do you want to kind of explain what the awful thing that we're talking about? I mean, the main thing, I guess. There's a lot that we could talk about.
God. Well, to quote The Office, I feel like I should start at the beginning, but I might have to go back even farther. So she has a history of making transphobic comments.
Mm-hmm.
But lately she has just been like doubling down, and really, I think, quintupling down at this point. Mm-hmm. And, she wrote this essay about how she's not transphobic, and she actually has trans friends, so being called transphobic hurts her feelings. But somehow viewing trans women as women hurts other women. I really don't even fully understand it. Mm. And I think it's because she's not really making a case. She's just repeating a whole bunch of things and then talking about child abuse and how she was abused by her first husband and like all of these irrelevant things, so that you can't really be like, but this is transphobic what you're doing, because, you know, she's throwing all this other stuff in there and it makes no sense. Like,
yeah, I think it all, I mean, yes, she has sort of dropped little comments here and there over the years, and it should have been clear to us what was happening, but I think it really came to a head this year, earlier this year, when she tweeted something that, she made a snarky comment about a headline that was something to the effect of people with female genitalia, or people with, you know, uteruses.
People who have periods.
Who mentioned people who have periods. Thank you. People who have periods. And she's like, oh, gee, I wish there was a word for this. I don't know, maybe like women. And it was basically erasing trans women, you know, who.
The thing about, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
About her comments were, you know, if she wants to make a snarky comment like only women have periods, she got so shut down in the comments on that she should have really taken that in. You know, she could have played it off as a joke. I don't think it was a joke, but
no.
Could have gone, you know, down that line. But instead, like Kelly said, she just doubles down. Mm-hmm. And so instead of just shutting her mouth, she really, for some reason, feels like we all just like desperately want to know what her fucking views are and wants to shove it down our throats. And so instead of just being quiet, she just keeps posting more tweets, all these essays. And it's like, no one is going to agree with you. I mean, if people are agreeing with her, they have other issues. But it's like, just shut up. Just shut your mouth. Nobody wants to hear it. We've all told you how we feel about it. You are ruining really happy memories for people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really, I mean, the thing about Harry Potter that I think a lot of people can relate to, and Rachel, you brought this up, like, it helps you, it's a lens for you to see the world through. Mm-hmm. And the books paint this picture of a group of people that is so welcoming, you know, they welcome Harry in, they welcome Hermione, even though she's not, you know, a pure blood wizard, which is another problem that I'm sure we will get into. But to now, you know, tell all your fans that you don't view them as who they are is just disgusting. It really is.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. She just doubles down. And if she just hadn't said anything, no one would be bothering her. But it's almost like she feels, I guess maybe she feels like she has more money than God, right? So
she does. I mean, it's not wrong.
Right. She can say anything she wants. And she feels, I guess maybe she feels her legacy is secure. And so she can just be as awful as she wants. And because, right, like Rachel said, I think, well, she has trans friends who, I don't know, which is such a dog whistle, which is such a like tell, right? If you have to say that you have friends of a certain group, you are definitely being judgmental or oppressive against that group. If you have to say that, right? Like,
and it's just, I mean, I don't really need to hear her opinion on anything. It's like you wrote a book. It was a great book. You've written a lot of books. But I don't need you to come in and tell me how to do other people. Mm-hmm. And I think she also, you know, in her whole essay and everything, she identifies as a TERF. And she thinks that if we include trans women and some men, you know, in our view of feminism, that that's hurting women. And it's like, no, because if you really are a feminist, you do need to look at intersectionality. You do need to look at people who have a different gender identity or a different sexual orientation or a different race. You know, like all those things do play a part. And I would hope that someone as seemingly educated and definitely as successful as her would think about these things, but clearly she does not care. And I think that also is a little heartbreaking to see. That she just doesn't care.
Right. It's, you know, it's like, yes, she said all these horrible things and have all these horrible views. And she has so many people. I mean, she has a lot of people defending her, but she has so many more people telling her why she is wrong and giving her like, just like testimony as to why she is wrong. And she just ignores it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, she doesn't.
She doesn't even counter-argue the people who are arguing against her. All she does is just, like you were saying, Kendall, just doubling down on what she already said and pretending to make it about defending battered women like her when it's like, well, also you're best friends with Johnny Depp and hired him to be, you know, allowed him to be cast in your movies, so... You know, that argument is BS too. Mm-hmm.
Defending battered women like is great and important.
Mm-hmm.
Also completely unrelated to what she opened her mouth about in the beginning.
Right.
It's like, okay, shut up. You know, like just be quiet. I just don't get why she cannot stop fumbling the bag, you know, like just stop. But she cannot stop herself.
Yeah, she can't help it. I don't understand why either.
And, like, we also know that trans people, especially women, are more likely to be hurt or killed either by suicide or, you know, acts of violence. And it's not hard to not make it worse.
Right.
And with the platform that she has and the number of people that would listen to what she's saying and maybe would have their opinions changed, it would have been really awesome if she could have just not done this. Or even after the first time, just been like, I don't know enough. Maybe I'll educate myself and then just stop talking about it.
Right? I am so glad you said that because number one, that is such an important thing to remember. Obviously, like the horrible rates of violence against trans people in general, but also the fact that she could have taken it as a learning opportunity and reflected on what people told her and said, oh, you know what? I made a mistake. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I respect people when they do that. Just recently, you know, Anderson Cooper apologized for something that he had said that people told him was offensive. And you know what? I respect people more when they can take that on and kind of learn from it. Yes. But she has not done that. And it's disappointing.
It's so true, Kendall. If she had just said, you know what? I hear you. And after reflecting, I can see how what I said, you know, she could have apologized and backtracked, and she didn't. Instead, she continues to double down. She continues to, like you said, Rachel, her hypocritical defense, saying that she's defending women who've been abused. It's just, it's total BS. She's pretending it's like protecting children. I mean, it's just, it's so nonsensical. And yeah, like you said, Kendall, she just refuses to learn and to listen to her fans who have made her, who have supported her all these years and who have loved her work and who she's broken our hearts, you know? And I think it's classic white feminism, you know, because like you said, Kendall, she's not thinking about this through an intersectional lens. And it's kind of the classic case of, you know, white feminism, you know, trying to hold on to your marginalization and dismiss the experiences of others because you benefit. Ultimately it's because you benefit from the patriarchy. And it's just, the fact that she can't even like open her mind to that, it's really sad.
Especially as a woman who says that she calls herself JK Rowling or Rowling. I don't really care because I don't respect her enough to like say it right. But she went by her initials because she thought that people would think, you know, her name's Joanne, that as a woman, she couldn't be a good writer. So right. This is something that she claims played a huge role in the beginning of her career and yet does not stop to think about the effects on other women.
Yeah.
It's gross.
When we look at Harry Potter as books, which we all loved and we all devoured. But in hindsight, now that we are having this conversation about the author, the creator of this world and these characters and her worldview, you know, does it color or does it make us rethink some of the elements in the book? And Kendall, I think you touched on this earlier, some things that were problematic elements of the book. So has it made you view things in a different way?
I would say it has. Like I mentioned earlier with like all the pure blood stuff, there's some ickiness there that I don't know if as a child I fully realized. I also want to say separating the art from the artist is kind of a struggle I think a lot of people are having in the last few years with all the R. Kelly stuff and the Michael Jackson stuff. And you know, I've heard a lot of people explain that, you know, a Michael Jackson song was playing at my parents' wedding anniversary and it was a huge thing. And so I have these memories now that are related to him and I don't want to lose that memory for myself. So I do feel like that is a constant struggle. And I think unfortunately, as more and more comes out about some people that have been put on a pedestal, I think it's something we're going to be suffering from for a while. And I don't know where I fall on being able to separate that. So I guess that's just a moving target for me, you know,
depends
on the situation. But for her especially, I have been really deeply offended and just disappointed, you know, seeing your hero disappoint you is just, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But
it does feel like the signs were there, you know, when you look back on some of the things she put in the books, Kelly, I think you, bankers. Yeah. What were you saying, Kelly?
I said goblin bankers.
Yeah. Speak more to that because I feel like that's important to bring up.
They were described in ways that have also been used to describe like Jewish people with like hooked noses and very attached to the money. And it's it's deeply disturbing, obviously, but also in light of this, I feel like definitely dog whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the depiction of the house elves after they were all freed, and a lot of them became like lazy drunks,
mm-hmm.
which, mm-hmm. you know, because they liked their life of servitude and they didn't want to be freed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and then, and I feel like this is something I've quoted a lot, but in Rodham, there's the line, it's almost like the subtext is becoming text.
Mm-hmm.
I have not read her Cormoran novels, but spoiler, I guess, the villain in the last one is apparently a man who dresses up like a woman to kill women.
What the fuck are you kidding?
No, yeah, know, that's right, true. She makes what? The villain. The fifth Cormoran Strike novel was just published, and the villain is a man who dresses up as a woman in order to gain access to certain places that only women are allowed, and therefore kill women.
This yeah. bitch is tripping. Like, are
yeah.
you
yeah. And that obsessed me. I really enjoyed the Cormoran Strike novels too. I mean, you know, obviously not the level of Harry Potter, but like they're a well-written detective novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my hindsight with the Harry Potter books and a little bit with the Cormoran Strike novels is her depiction of strong female characters. Like, let's take Hermione. So Hermione is arguably the smartest, most capable female character in all of literature. And she spends most of 7 books doing the Harry and Ron's homework.
Literally.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, how is that being, you know, and why wasn't she the star of the series? I don't know. It just is weird.
It's funny because I do remember hearing interviews with JK where she said, you know, I originally wrote Harry to be a girl character, but changed it because I thought it would sell better as a boy character. And I can understand that, honestly. Right. Like, sexism and misogyny runs deep. And she was probably right.
I cannot fault her for that, for sure. I mean, I definitely can't for that. But
yeah.
But she also has shown she has those misogynistic views.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that just adds another layer to it.
And like, she wrote these books in the 90s, right? So it could also be, like we were saying earlier, people should evolve, right? Say she wrote these books in the 90s and now she was saying, you know what? I should have made Hermione the hero. I should have put, I was wrong. That would have been great. And it would have meant a lot to a lot of young girls. And I wish I had done that. Like, but you know, it's, yeah.
Well, her comments since then on Hermione have been, oh, I should have made her get with Harry and not with Ron.
That's so weird. I'm sorry.
Of what she really feels like she should change. And that does make me think of other changes that she has retroactively made.
Yes.
And a big one, obviously, was Dumbledore's sexuality. And, you know, when she announced that, I remember I was in college and a lot of people were like, wow, that's amazing. That's groundbreaking. And to me, I actually found it to be offensive that she would say that when the books were over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not allow a character who is a main character and also the moral compass of the books, really,
mm-hmm.
to not show him as like a multifaceted individual and to not acknowledge his sexuality when you're claiming that that existed the whole time. To me, it's more erasure, if anything.
Yes.
I don't think that that is good to say retroactively. You should have shown him as the hero he was from book one while acknowledging that he was gay. That's how you allow people to see someone as a role model.
He wasn't even coded as gay.
No.
And I have a couple of notes on this, actually, because I was thinking about that. I was like, is there any textual evidence that could be, you know, argued right. as, you know, this is why he's gay? And I'm like, the only two things I can think of are both either stereotypes or very problematic. So the first being Dumbledore was always very flamboyantly dressed. Stereotype, right? And then the other thing is, everyone described, or not everyone, but like Bathilda Bagshaw and people would describe his relationship with Grindelwald as like, what was the word I used? Unhealthy. So problematic, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're saying that she was writing that as a hint to his sexuality, that's not a point in her favor.
No, no.
At all.
And actually, I think in the fourth book, where they're having the ball for all the, like,
champions.
It sort of has some sort of, like, romantic interaction with the woman that's the headmaster of the French school.
Oh, yeah, they're dancing together.
Yeah, and that's really the only mention she makes at all of him being anything other than, like, a two-dimensional character. So, I mean, it's just, I was disappointed back then when I heard her say that, because I really feel like that was a missed opportunity. If you really do care about LGBT, you know, rights, it's like she's shown she doesn't care about them, obviously, but that was an opportunity to introduce a really strong gay character, and she didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And it has only gotten worse in the intervening years, which is remarkable, really.
Kelly, right. I want to get you in here, too.
I was just going to say that they had the chance to put that into the second Fantastic Beasts movie and make it movie canon, and they did not do that. And I know that most authors really would not have that level of control, but I'm sure that she does, because, you know, like, I feel like she had approval over casting, and she definitely demanded Johnny Depp stay in.
What was she thinking?
I don't think she was.
Well, he's finally out. I mean, what do we think of that? Like, they fired him. I think she doesn't have as much clout anymore, which is a good sign, right?
I agree. Yeah.
I heard that Mads Mikkelsen is going to be replacing him, and I am very happy about that because I love him.
Cool.
Good.
But Kelly, I think you bring up, like, such a good point. Why didn't that become a plot point in those? That's a perfect chance.
I think she is an ally up to a point, and it's not a very far away point. Like, if I can say this, that's fine. But if I have to do anything to show it, no, thank you, please. And I just want to say, too, you could maybe argue that she is an older white person, and maybe they just don't, like, think about things the same way we do, but I just want to point out that I have seen Joe Biden's 100-day plan, and one of the first things he wants to do is use federal resources to keep trans people, especially women, and especially trans women of color, safe. And he is an old white man, and he has figured this out and gotten better, so there is no excuse for her. She gets no out, as far as I'm concerned. Like,
absolutely.
If Joe Biden can figure it out, we all can.
She's younger than him.
And he's had a long history in politics, and we all know what his missteps in the past has been. He's a good example of someone who can grow, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And hopefully we'll see more, but
yeah.
Well, Kendall, you brought this up a little bit earlier about what does it mean to be a fan, a Harry Potter fan, post JKR on Twitter. Now that we are in this world where our eyes are open, there's no dismissing or there's no ignoring the fact that the creator of this series and this world that we all love so much is doing things that are actively harmful, I think. You know, it's not just that we disagree, right? I think that's important too. It's not just that we have a different view. It's that she's actively saying these things and doing harm to people by doubling down on it. So how do we move forward? Kelly, why don't you start?
Okay. Well, first of all, I personally have a very hard time separating art from artist. And what I have come to for myself is that if, you know, once we learn that someone is trash, I will not support them or their work for the most part. It's also hard because, you know, like nothing exists in a vacuum. So, okay, we'll say Roman Polanski. I own Rosemary's Baby and Chinatown. I would not buy any other movies of his. If I did end up going to see one because I wanted to support maybe like the cast or the screenwriter, whatever, what I would do is donate the ticket price and concessions to Rain. Mm. So that's kind of how I offset my karmic footprint, because I mean, it is true, like a boycott of somebody's entire work, like for J.K. Rowling, for example, that's also boycotting the publishing company, yeah, like the company that made the movie or whatever.
Bookstores.
Bookstores, yeah. So, I mean, you can still support someone who's problematic, and there are ways to get around it, or I guess like mitigate that. I can't imagine wanting to buy any of her future books. I don't know what I would do if there's an 8th Harry Potter book. I do think also it's worth pointing out that pretty much everybody else associated with Harry Potter, especially Daniel Radcliffe and I believe Emma Watson, but also definitely Rupert Grint, who, by the way, has a daughter now. Did you guys know this? He has a baby.
Yeah.
Her name is Wednesday.
I feel old.
I mean, yeah, it's, but I mean, there are ways I think to stay with Harry Potter, because most of the people with it are good people, and
yeah,
I think that's what I love most about fandom, is that you can create something and then you turn it off into the world and it resonates with people and it grows past you. Like, it is bigger than J.K. Rowling. And her transphobic bullshit has kind of ruined it for me a little bit, but I think I'll get it back. I hope I will.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to define yourself as, like, you know, by Hogwarts House. Like, if I say I'm a Ravenclaw, that's a lot easier and faster than saying, like, oh, you know, I like books and being by myself and, you know, thinking about things too much. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Too long, didn't listen. I don't know, guys. It's complicated.
I know. Well, Kendall, you were saying that too. Like, you're not sure what it means for you, for your identity, I guess we can say.
I mean, this is something I struggle with a lot in all areas. I mean, musicians, actors, writers. And I guess I don't have a definitive way that I handle it. I mean, sometimes, and I think in this case, it's just a complete shut off for me. Like, I do not have the urge to consume any Harry Potter content at this time, which is really sad, I think, but I'm having a hard time separating it. I don't know if I'll feel that way in the future, who knows, but I'm extremely disappointed with her and how this whole situation has gone, because it really is a mess of her own making.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's been hard for me to want to continue consuming Harry Potter media.
Yeah.
And I never really wanted to describe myself by my house, because I'm pretty sure I'm Slytherin and people give you really bad looks when you say that. But I mean, that's what I am. I can't, you know, when you cut it into four slices, that's what I fell under, I think.
Also, so somewhat of a problematic element when you think about it. Like, kids need to be separated into groups by one personality trait, and that's going to determine their future. Like, well,
like, they describe Hufflepuffs as, like, idiots, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah, for sure.
And Ravenclaw's these like ultimate geniuses, and then Gryffindors are good, and Slytherins are bad, and that's it. Yes. No nuance there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say that we think Slytherin is bad because that's, I mean, history is told by the victors, and Harry Potter is told from a Gryffindor perspective.
Yeah.
I am a Ravenclaw with very real Slytherin undertones. Slytherin rising, I guess, if we're discussing it astrologically. But, you know, I don't think Slytherin is bad. Slytherin is ambitious, and there is nothing wrong with that.
Thank you. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Rachel, how do you see yourself moving forward as a Harry Potter fan now?
It's definitely something I'm still struggling with. I took all of my editions of the books, and they're packed away right now. I can't look at them with the same amount of, like, joy I once had with them. I mean, I have beautiful editions. I have the newest UK paperbacks. I have the newest US paperbacks that show the castle on the spines when you line them all up. I have my original Goblet of Fire hardback first edition that has the typo that I could probably sell for a lot, but I would never because it has like James coming out of the wand first instead of Lily for the Priory Incantatum, which I think she wrote it that way on purpose, but then forgot that that's not the way that they died. And when people called her out on that, she said it was an editing mistake, which I anyway. Long story short.
Wait, she blamed her editor?
I think she did, yeah. Because in the first edition of Goblet of Fire, it said James came out of the wand first, and then it said Lily Potter blossomed from the end of the wand. Obviously, she meant blossomed for Lily and not James.
Right.
That's the way she wrote it when she didn't realize she was doing it backwards in her head.
So she blamed her editor.
She said it was some editing mistake or I don't even know. I just know that she like didn't just come out and just say like, oh yeah, I was thinking more about Harry seeing his mom second instead of his dad second. Like, you know, because it was, I think, more impactful that way.
Right. Right.
But it's just not the way the spell was supposed to work. Anyway, I have all these like first editions of the hardbacks that I got, you know, that I would pre-order, you know, before they were released. Yeah. And I do still love them. And I think I will read them again.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is I'm not sure how I will. Well, like Kelly said, I'm not sure how I will go about if she does publish something else in the Harry Potter universe. But also, I don't know how I'm going to introduce when I eventually have kids,
right?
Introduce them to it. I don't, I honestly have no answer for that.
I think you definitely should, though, because there's a lot of value in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it's going to be a really good way to teach children to love things and also examine them critically, which is a really important skill. And the thing I keep thinking about is after the 2016 election, when I was, I mean, you know, you were all there.
Unfortunately.
Pretty much right after, I was talking to an author friend of mine, Joe Knowles, and we were just like super depressed. And we were talking about how Harry Potter kind of gave us so much hope and comfort, because it's like, well, the Death Eaters rose to power and we need Dumbledore's army. And we like formed a Facebook group called Dumbledore's Army. And, you know, like the cover photo was like all the kids with the wands up. And I mean, for what was a pretty horrible 4 years there, that was a really good memory of hope. And I'm not letting her ruin that.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel too. I don't want her to be able to ruin something that has given me so much joy, but like everyone else has been saying, I don't think it's going to give me as much joy as it once did. So I've just put pause on it for right now. I haven't tried to read the books. I haven't watched the movies. I've just sort of been ignoring it. And we can't travel now anyway. So it's not like I could you know, go to Harry Potter World in Florida, like I was doing every year, pretty much. I mean, that sounds crazy now that I'm thinking about it, but
I'm really right there with you, Julia. I was
I've never been. I've never been, and now I don't think I'm going to go.
Right. And I loved it. I had so much fun doing that and feeling, because they did a great job with that park, and you feel like you're there. You feel like you're in Hogsmeade. You feel like you're in Diagon Alley. You feel like you're in Hogwarts. It's a great experience. They did a great job with it. And I would love to keep going and supporting, you know, people who are, you know, working at the park or, but, you know, I don't know. It's just, it might not be for me anymore, but also maybe it'll just take some time when I can feel like, you know what, like Kelly said, I can make donations, however much I spend to enjoy this thing that I am a fan of, you know, the work itself, not the creator, but if I can match that money to a worthy cause, but I don't know. Yeah. It's a big question mark for me too. If she wrote another book, if she wrote Harry Potter book 8 or the biggest thing for me would be if she wrote a prequel about the Marauders, I wouldn't know what to do because that is my dream. That has, like, I've always said, I want that book. And like Cursed Child was, I didn't enjoy the book. I loved the play. Rachel and I went to see it, but reading it is like, I wouldn't reread it, but I would have read the heck out of a Marauders prequel. And now if she does it, she'll probably do it just to spite me.
Honestly, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. She'll be like, they want this. And then they're going to have to like get it, even though they don't want to.
I honestly think, I don't think I would read it if another. Yeah. Right. That's where I'm falling right now. I mean, ask me in 5 years, like I could have totally changed my tune, but right now it still feels so real and like so current. Mm-hmm. And I also just again want to point out that she just had to be quiet. That's all she had to do. Was but she just can't stop.
And yeah, but I
constant. Every time I see her name pop up, it's about something negative that she said or that she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that is even worse. You know that she hasn't learned her lesson from this.
I know, but I do think like if anyone is out there and is like, but I don't support her, but I do love the book so much, and they are like so important to me, and like. I know a lot of people have said like it helped me get through dark times. You know, I think it's okay if that's you. It's okay to still be a Harry Potter fan. It is okay to if you can separate the art from the artist. I do want to say I think that should be okay for them to do that, especially if it helps them. You know, a lot of trans people have said like these books made me feel better about who I was and like made me feel like it was okay to be myself, which is just such a ironic like.
Yeah.
Now, when you think about it, but if it still can bring you joy, like, I think that, I don't know, she shouldn't be able to ruin that. You know, I feel like that's what I feel like, but.
I can see that. I'm just, you know, stubborn.
Yeah. No. And for me, I don't know, like, cause I don't think it would bring me the same happiness that it once did. So.
And I mean, who knows, maybe she will. Eventually, you know, not that it won't be too late, I'll still like not be a fan of hers, but if she does decide to like, you know, take her blinders off and educate herself and just like realize, you know, what she did wrong, actually apologize and actually do better and like put her literal billions of dollars of money where her mouth is and, you know, improve, you know, I'm not going to say that's not allowed. I think that would be great if she did that. And that might, you know, that might make me okay with spending money on stuff again. But for now, I think I'm going to try my hardest not to spend any money that could, go towards her royalties.
I agree. And I try to be fair and balanced, which is really hard to do. But I mean, if she were to make a heartfelt apology that was genuine and she did try to educate herself, I do think I could maybe consume her products again.
Mm-hmm. I don't hold my breath that that's going to happen, but I agree.
But it would be nice if she
did. But she has so much money. Like, I don't know. Do we need to worry about spending money to make her richer? She is the richest already.
Right.
Like it's not going to make a difference.
True.
What it will help are publishers and bookstores and, you know, people who work on the movies. Like,
that's
okay. It's not, and you know, like someone, Kelly or Rachel, I can't remember who said this, all of the actors from that movie have also said, like, you know, we don't agree with her. So
Redmayne, who really should have disagreed with her, but that's another problem.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. So it's a tough question. And like, I just think it's like, bottom line, it's okay if you're still grappling with it because it's not your fault that she's trash.
Exactly.
So.
And I just want to say the most obnoxious, maybe not the most obnoxious thing, but like the people I know who don't like Harry Potter, either because it's not their thing or whatever, don't be that person who then, you know, like, didn't like Harry Potter and is now using this as justification. Like, do that. That's
no.
You didn't know. Yeah. On some weird visceral level, you didn't know he was awful.
Yeah. I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the thing that would get me the most was when people would, like, obstinately not read Harry Potter because it was too popular.
Yeah.
And I was just like... Yeah. Don't be that person.
Yeah.
If you don't want to read it, fine, but don't like give me a dissertation on why you don't read popular things. I don't know.
Yeah. It's also, like, that's great.
Most of the time there are reasons things are popular.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since we're probably not going to be snuggling up with books 1 through 7 this Christmas season, I think we should give people, because we are a book recommendation podcast, primarily. So we should give some recommendations for what you could read instead of Harry Potter and or instead of the Cormorant Strike novels. So Kendall, do you have any recommendations you would like to offer?
I do. So to replace, you know, the Harry Potter sized hole in your life, I would recommend The Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo.
I have that on my shelf.
It's excellent. It's very spooky and scary, but it's takes place at Yale, and the main character's name is Galaxy, and she's grappling with like powers that she didn't know she had, and it's a very adult version of Harry Potter. You know, there's like drugs and sex and stuff like that. But, I really recommend it. I was glued to it. I loved it. And you know, it kind of scratches that itch for like a school, based wizardry thing. So I would definitely recommend that. It's really, really good.
Nice.
I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
We'll love it, I promise.
Circa Kelly.
I have it and I have read it. And I
recommend.
I do read too. It's so good though. It's so good.
Isn't it? I mean, it's hard to put down. Like it's a great book. So
yeah,
I loved it so much.
Kelly, do you have a recommendation?
Yes, I do. I haven't actually finished it because that's how my weekend has been going. But, The House in the Cerulean Sea by TJ Klune. Yes. And it's so good. Like, it is smack you in the face amazing.
Oh.
It's about this man named Linus, and he is a caseworker, and his job is to go investigate magical children to make sure that they're not going to basically destroy the world. And he gets sent to this orphanage on an island in the middle of nowhere where there are 6 children who are all like theoretically super, super dangerous. And he has to go make sure that they're being kept under control. And it's so good. And it's very funny and it's very sweet. Like, it's just a good natured book. And I love it so much. It's perfect, I think. And I'm just, also there's gay content. So
cool.
Yeah.
Not gay characters that the author is going to then say are gay after with no evidence.
Not so far, but I'll let you know.
Try that one out. That sounds great.
It does sound really good. Rachel, what about you?
Okay, so, I mean, I have so many in my head, but I think I have talked about this on the podcast before, but I think my replacement for Harry Potter recommendation would be the Keeper of the Lost City series, which is a series that starts middle grade and grows into YA, just like Harry Potter did. Sorry, I just like knocked my computer. It is, and it has a female main character. Her name is Sophie, and she has been raised her whole life by humans. And she finds out when she's 11 or 12 that she's actually an elf, a magical elf. And she has powers. And she gets sort of tossed into this magical world where there are elves and trolls and just like all these magical creatures. And she goes to magic school. Definitely the first couple of books follow that sort of Harry Potter formula of magic school, makes friends, danger at the end. But after starting with like book three, it's just like adventure and danger and like problem solving all the way through. And wow, it's so exciting. It's, the books are humongous. I mean, the shortest ones are 600 and something pages long. Wow. The biggest ones are close to 900 pages. So it will keep you occupied. There are 8 or 9 already published.
I need to read these. You've been talking about these. I really need to read them.
They are so fun. And I love Fitz. I love everybody. I love Bianna. I love all the characters. They're so great. Yeah.
Oh, I really need to get on those because you've mentioned them many times and I know I would love them.
Yeah, they're so cute. Yeah.
I had such a hard time coming up with one recommendation for Harry Potter because there are other, I feel like I've talked about Akata Witch before. I've talked about the Wayward Children series before, and those are all great. You should definitely read those if you love Harry Potter. But there was one series that just popped into my head and I was like, yes, if you love Harry Potter, you will love these books. So that is Terry Pratchett's Tiffany Aching books. So the one in particular that I'm actually holding up right now is called A Hat Full of Sky, A Tiffany Aching Adventure. It's actually the second book in the series, but I think it's a good one to start with, especially if you're a Harry Potter fan, because the series of books follows the character Tiffany from when she's 9 to like 17. In this book, she's 11, and she is just starting her witch training. So she is a witch, and she's been living among the Weefree men that are they're called the Knack MacFeagle. They're these like little people. Terry Pratchett is a fantasy writer who also writes a lot of very humorous novels. If you haven't read his Discworld books, there's so many of them, and they're all delightful. And this is part of the Discworld series, but these are his young adult novels. So these are YA children's, and Tiffany Aching is just this like plucky character, super smart. She is what Hermione should have been, I think, right? Because she's the hero. She goes to her witch training. There's this evil like being called the Hiver that is like the nemesis of the book that will take over your mind. And that's the like threat that she's ends up fighting in the books. But she also has like a nemesis at school whose name is Anna Grandma. She's kind of like the Draco. it's just so delightful. And I loved it. And I just think like Terry Pratchett is a gem. And I haven't talked about Terry Pratchett on this podcast, but I do love him. And he has so many books. So yeah, that's A Hat Full of Sky by Terry Pratchett.
Nice.
Okay, so now we're going to give a couple recommendations. If you love the Cormorant Strike novels, what are some alternatives that you could read? Kelly, we'll start with you.
So I think anyone who knows me and has talked to me about books at all has heard me talk about Sarah Paretsky, who is one of my most favorite authors. She has a series about a private detective, Via Warshawski, and Vic, her name is actually Victoria Warshawski, but like she goes by VI or Vic, and she is a private detective, and in her first book is Indemnity Only, but her later books become like really, really political, and she is super liberal and fighting for basically people who don't have a voice. And I love her so much. And every time I read one of her books, it reminds me of why we keep fighting and why we keep going, because it does make a difference. And her books are an accurate reflection of the world we live in, but they also make me feel so hopeful, because in a world with Sarah Paretsky and Vic, it's not all awful all the time.
Yeah.
So please read those, because they're wonderful.
Sounds good. Rach, what about you?
So I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'm not sure if I have. But my favorite detective series that I've read is actually not fully a detective series, but I guess, spoiler alert, the main character sort of works his way up towards a detective type role. It's the Mike Bowditch series by Paul Dwyeran. And it is about, the main character's name is Mike Bowditch, and he is a Maine game warden. So, I mean, he's basically, for people who don't know, game wardens are they're like police, but they more are related to crimes that are related to fish and wildlife and state and federally owned land, like state parks and federal, national parks, things like that. So he is sort of, when the series starts, the first one is called The Poacher's Son, and he is a newly minted game warden and sort of fresh out of college and the police academy kind of thing. And his dad is accused in a shooting where a police officer was shot. So there's this huge manhunt going on for his dad, who lives in northern Maine and is really adept at hiding in the wilderness, right? And he has to grapple with the fact that he's trying to find his dad, he's trying to help with the investigation, but he thinks his dad is innocent. He doesn't think his dad is the one that shot the cop, but all of his cop friends are you're betraying us other cops by not thinking that our suspect is the right one, right? So he's breaking the rules, but also he's right. Okay, so big disclaimer with this series, it is sort of regular white guy cop is a good guy, there are good guy white guy cops. I it's not saying that they don't exist, but it is a little bit like that, just so everybody knows. But the author, Paul Dwyeran, he's pretty, he gets very liberal in his later books, especially. There's a lot of things in the books that are definitely anti-Paul LePage, who was our governor for 8 years and was just basically on a state level. Yeah. He doesn't really... He definitely shows all facets of sort of police work and things like that. Yeah. It's a very entertaining series. There are, I think, 12 books out right now.
I think I would enjoy these. So
they are so good. Yeah. I've been buying them for our dad for his birthday every year.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Buy a few more. And he's like, where are the rest? So
Yeah.
Well,
for our last Cormorant Strike recommendation, I'm going to recommend the Veronica Speedwell series. So these are, I think there are 5 books in the series now, and these are British detective novels that are set, I think, during the time of Queen Victoria, I want to say. But the main character is Veronica Speedwell, and she and the author's name is Deanna Rayburn, and she, Veronica Speedwell and her partner, Revelstoke Templeton Vane, he comes from this wealthy family, but he's estranged from his family, and he's kind of big, burly, no nonsense, lives as a hermit type, and she's a scientist, she studies butterflies, and she's just you know, outspoken and like not your typical lady of the times. Like she's very like sexually like adventurous and like talks about like women's rights and things. And they start solving mysteries together. Like they get thrown together and like now they solve mysteries together. And it's just so fun and funny. And there's definitely like romantic tension between them where like every scene is just like, oh, these two. Yeah, and I highly recommend the audiobooks because that's how I've read all of them and it's so good. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to put one more footnote on my recommendation for the Mike Bodich series is that Paul Dwyeran, I think, is a male author who writes female characters well.
Nice.
I think most of the female characters in his books are pretty multifaceted and they're not just there to like save the neck of the male protagonist, but the male protagonist still gets all the credit. Like,
yeah,
you know, their stories are interwoven with his very well. And I enjoy it.
Nice. Well, those are all great. And I don't know if we've, you know, solved the problem. How do you solve a problem like J.K. Rowling? Right. but hopefully we've, I think it was a great discussion. Kendall, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. This was really fun. I loved it.
Good.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Thanks again to Kendall for joining us. You can all find us on social media at WYSR_podcast on Instagram and on Twitter. You can email us at whatyoushouldreadpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Goodreads at whatyoushouldreadpodcast. And yeah, give us a rating and a review. And we really appreciate you all tuning in.
And now you know what you should read.
And it's not by J.K. Rowling.
No. You're welcome.
Bye. Fergie!